The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. I'm your host, Bob Hayes, and today is Friday, the 24th of March, 2006. This is show number 48. Now this is the Jerez preview show, and that means one thing, the MotoGP season gets started this weekend. The long winter is just about over. We're finally going to get to see some racing. I'm really, really super excited about it, and I can't wait. So, for the preview show, we have an audio lap of the Jerez circuit. It's going to be followed by a recap of last year's race and some comments and thoughts about this year and what we might see. And after that, we have a call with Chuck Axlund, manager of Team Roberts, who took time out of his extremely busy schedule during the week before the first race of the season to have a little chat with me. I thought that was pretty cool. So we had kind of an interesting conversation. We're going to play that for you in a minute. But before we start with all of that, there's a few things I want to cover. First off, the contest for the Komodo Leathers is going along just WFO. It really is. If you didn't listen to last week's show, that was episode 47, you're missing out and you got to listen to it. Go ahead and listen to last week's show. Find out the details on how to enter this contest to win your very own Komodo Miso or Sino Leathers. This is a full race suit, you know, full nice one-piece suit, and it's an awesome prize. It's like an $800 or $1,000 value depending upon which one you pick. Wayne Wilder from Komodo Gear was on the show last week, and we had a great conversation. And he decided to do a fantastic contest for MotoGP OD listeners. It's really cool. So take a look at KomodoGear.com. See their product line. They've got some cool stuff. Pick the suit that you want. If you win the contest, you know, live the dream and all that. See it, live it, learn it, love it. Someone's got to win it. You know, it might as well be you. Now, let me tell you about it. I actually have had a ton of entries. The last few contests I did, those were for the American Road Racer calendars last year. And I got a decent enough response on them. I was kind of surprised at how many emails I'd had. But I guess if you really want to get a lot of entries, you have to give away the big prizes like a $800 racing suit. So I've been getting a whole ton of emails in the contest mailbag every day. And thankfully, all the answers so far have been correct. Pretty much just what I'm looking for. I was kind of a little worried about that, that we'd get, you know, wrong ones and didn't want to, have to tell somebody, well, sorry. So if you haven't yet entered, make sure that you do your homework and listen to that interview to get the answers right, because you don't want to be the first person that's going to get a rejection letter. I've been getting so many contest entries, in fact, that there's no way that I can personally answer all of them. I have been reading them all, of course, and I want to say thanks to everyone that wrote in comments and so forth. There's some, a lot of nice comments and a lot of sympathy comments about missing the USGP because of my upcoming deployment with the Navy Reserve and all that. You know, thank you very much for your good wishes. But, you know, there's 130,000 other guys that are over there that aren't going to be going to any motorcycle races or sporting events or whatever it is they like. So I guess I'll just have to kind of suck it up and deal with it. But it does still bum me out. But there's always 2007. I will be there. On a lighter note, I have been really bad about forgetting to mention the motorcycle podcast group lately, the past few shows, and all the other great motorcycle-related podcasts that are available and are members of that motorcycle podcast group. So if you haven't heard about the motorcycle podcast group, and if you haven't heard one of our shows, it's the guys from several different motorcycle related podcasts. And we all get together on a conference call. We talk about different motorcycle related topics. It's kind of a more of a general motorcycling slant than what we have here at MotoGP OD, but it's still very, very interesting stuff if you are, you know, a motorcyclist. And the hosts from MotoCast, V-Twin Journal, the Road Racer podcast, and the Knee Dragon podcast, along with yours truly, are all involved in it. It's great stuff. We have a really good time. The show website is at www.motorcyclepodcastgroup.com. And we also have a forum that's starting to pick up and get kind of a lot of activity at forum.motorcyclepodcastgroup.com. Okay, so drop on in and participate in that. Some good stuff going on in there, and make sure to check out also, besides the motorcycle podcast group, make sure to check out the other members of the motorcycle podcast group themselves, their own shows, which is MotoCast, V-Twin Journal, Road Racer Podcast, and the Knee Dragon Podcast. They're all available in iTunes, and I'll put their sites are all up on the MotoGBOD.com site as well. Now, while we're talking about other websites, RideOn2.com has started their tipping contest again this year. So you go in and you pick who's going to win and who's going to place and who DNF, that kind of thing. So if you're hearing this podcast before the Jerez race, you're probably not too late to put in your picks. You can do it up to an hour. You can enter and edit until 4 hours, not 1 hour, excuse me, 4 hours before the race. So come on over there to RideOn2. That's RideOn2, RideOn2.com, and test your tipping prowess. I pretty much sucked last year, but I was only doing it for the last half of the season. So, you know, that kind of counted for something. So pretty much this year, watch out. And last couple of administrative type items before we get going here. Steve Jones updated his Excel spreadsheet that gives you the times for the MotoGP races in your local time zone in case you're going to watch it on MotoGP.com where it's live, or maybe if you want to avoid going to MotoGP.com so you don't spoil it in case you're watching it taped late on TV or whatever. So this year, Steve made one big workbook that has all 17 races in it. So instead of having a new workbook with every race, you just download the one at the beginning of the season, unless Steve updates it or something throughout the year, that one will do you. So it's pretty cool. You should check it out. You can find it on Steve Jones's website at stevejones.cc/MotoGP. And of course, as always, there's a direct link on MotoGPOD.com. And last thing, if you don't read the online column called Road Racer Head by Chris Johnham, it's a Road Racer Head, and Chris Johnham is from Road Racer X magazine. It's their online column. Well, if you don't read it yet, you really need to start. It's actually a pretty cool column. Chris has mentioned MotoGPOD several times, which makes it even cooler. And in last Friday's installment, which is number 11, is volume 2, number 11, I think it was, among other more serious topics, Chris takes some of these Chuck Norris facts that have been kind of running around the internet lately, and he adapts them for Matt Mladen. It was really pretty damn funny. So you can find Road Racer Head and all kinds of other stuff at roadracerx.com. Alrighty, let's get on with something about MotoGP for a change. I got an email last week that I wanted to comment on real quick. Grace, listener to MotoGPOD, Grace in Washington, D.C. wrote, "Hi Bob, Autosport just carried a story that the EU's issue over CVC's involvement with Formula One is that they didn't want one company owning both Formula One and MotoGP. This makes logical sense to me. However, as a big fan of both formats, I don't want Formula One to succeed at MotoGP's expense. Do you have any insider thoughts on this?" Well, as a matter of fact, Grace, yes, I do. This, you know, kind of might not be the most exciting topic in MotoGP right now. You know, you're talking about a bunch of bankers that are kind of buying up controlling interest in racing series and all that, but it might very well have some very long-reaching effects, and it's very important to our sport. And to tell you the truth, I'm a little disappointed. Dorn is kind of doing a fine job with MotoGP right now, in my opinion. And if CVC sells off their controlling interest in Dorna, you know, are things going to be changing in a bad way? I don't really want to find that out. Crash.net ran a story by Wayne Gardner last week that was talking about the current sponsorship state in MotoGP. And we've seen stories like this before, but this was another slightly different slant in the article by Wayne Gardner. And he basically says the series is in trouble. You know, big name sponsors are not exactly lining up with giant bags of cash. And we all know that racing takes giant bags of cash. And that if Rossi is going to be retiring, that Rossi is the thing is keeping MotoGP's interest alive right now. And that without him, he thinks that it's going to be in trouble. So if Dorna is sold, are these new owners going to be so concerned with, you know, with cash flow and all that sort of thing that they're going to start wanting to tinkering with the series in order to try to attract sponsors? And, you know, tinkering is not a good thing. Going back to Formula One, look at what has happened to Formula One over the last few years with these just ridiculous rule changes and constantly. And even actually, we're maybe getting the tip of the iceberg in MotoGP with the 800cc engine rule. I certainly hope not. But we're going to find out because, you know, you don't want to be doing that. You want to find a format and kind of stick with it. So if you do get a bunch of bankers that are a lot more hands-on than CVC has been, you know, it really could be bad news for the sport. Now, on the other hand, sure thing, it might work out that Dorna is sold off, but still stays the same, that the new buyers are, you know, hands-off types, much as when CVC bought Dorna. And, you know, maybe Dorna will get a giant cash influx and then they can finance all kinds of privateers and, you know, like WCM and Pons, these guys that are the serious, passionate MotoGP racers with our teams with privateers. And, you know, that would bring more teams in. However, I'm a big pessimist, so I kind of don't really believe that. I think it's going to be a bad thing if they're sold off. But I guess we're going to find out one way or the other, won't we? All right, let's take an onboard lap at Jerez Circuit right now. I'm going to watch the onboard video and kind of describe what I'm seeing, talk about the corners a little bit as we come up on them. We're starting off on the start-finish straight. This is the fastest part of the circuit. We're up into sixth gear. It's around 175 miles an hour. Then heavy on the brakes, down to second gear for the more than 90-degree right-hander of turn one, the Expo 92 corner. Then a short straightaway that leads us into the Michelin corner. Speeds around 45 miles an hour here. One of the slowest corners on the circuit, still in second gear. Then a very short straight leading into a graceful left. Third gear corner, which is into a long sweeper of a corner. Nice high speeds around here, about 100 miles an hour or so, leading onto a short straight. Now we're going into the Cito Pons right-handed corner. It's a nice, graceful third gear sweeper. Speeds are up around 75, 80-odd miles an hour or so. Then we're on the back straight, getting up back up into sixth gear, 170-odd miles an hour. Just momentarily touch the sixth gear back down through the gears for the dry sack corner. Another slow almost hairpin right, 45 miles an hour. And then this leads us around to a graceful third gear left-handed corner. And we're going around there, in a very short straight here. We're back into a second gear for a nice eight left. And as we come around this left, we're going to lead into the double right-handed complex of the Angel Nieto and Baluquia turners. We're going down into second gear for that. A brief straightaway between the two, and then around the Baluquia corner. And then we're on another short straight as we go around the two fast rights that lead us back to the start-finish line eventually. We're in the third gear here, 95 miles an hour, 100-odd miles an hour through this. And then a short straight section with a small kink and leads us into the left-handed, almost a hairpin, all the way back down to second gear. And that brings us back out onto the start-finish straight to complete the lap of the Jerez Circuit. We're getting back up into sixth gear, and there we go. We finished our lap of the Jerez Circuit. Okay, so we had our little onboard lap there, an onboard audio tour of the Jerez Circuit. Now let's have some talk about this week's racing. So this weekend is the one we have been waiting for. It's it's finally here. Very excited. The season opener for MotoGP. The 2006 race schedule of 17 races in 15 countries. It kicks off in Jerez, Spain, just like it did last year. And much like last year, I'm looking for a really, really good race. First off, let's talk about last year. The preseason testing last year left some of the same questions that we have this year, some of the confusion, but I just don't remember it being quite so wild as it has been this year, with just quite so, all over the map. But then on the actual race weekend in 2005, Rossi qualified on pole with Gibernau and Melandri alongside on the front row. The universe was back in alignment and things were normal. And most of the first part of the race was actually fairly uneventful. Rossi and Gibernau broke away from the field, and they were racing each other pretty much through that first three quarters of the race, closely followed by Hayden. So there was pretty much a lead group of three. They were kind of breaking away from Hayden a little bit. Then about in three quarters of the way into the race, Hayden crashed out of a fairly solid third place finish. He didn't, of course, obviously didn't have it in the bag, but he was doing well in third place. And then he crashes out with about seven laps left, which left Gibernau and Rossi battling it out with each other at the front, and then a big gap back to Melandri, who had taken over third spot, inherited it when Hayden binned it. Now, with just a few laps left, Rossi decided that the time was right for the typical classic Rossi move, and he passed Gibernau for the lead, and it pretty much looked like it was over at that point. Then, on the last lap, Rossi ran it wide about halfway through the lap, and Gibernau passes him. Then Rossi does his unbelievable sort of sorcery that we've seen so many times in the past, and he manages to catch Gibernau back up within a few corners and then made the pass for the lead. So now we've got Rossi back in the lead, and we're thinking, okay, that's it. Now Rossi's going to win. And then, oh my God, Rossi is passed by Gibernau when Rossi runs it slightly wide. So I was just jumping up and down last year, getting all kinds of excited. And, this is how a last lap is supposed to be with three lead changes, bam, 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 in the last lap. And I'll bet you the gigantic crowd at Jerez was absolutely freaking out at the time. But then, on the last turn of the last lap, you've got Gibernau leading Rossi. And there's that tight, almost 180-degree left-hander that leads onto the start-finish straight. Gibernau kind of takes a delayed apex, and he thought he was shutting the door on Rossi, but he left it open just enough for Rossi to kind of shove his Yamaha right in there up on the inside. They touched, which is actually more like collided, and that forced Gibernau off the track into the gravel. Sette managed to keep the bike upright, and he got back on track several seconds behind now, you know, to finish second. He was still well ahead of Melandri in third because the gap was so big. And, you know, he was actually very lucky not to have completely gone down. But I'll tell you, Sette was pissed off. And justifiably so, to an extent, because it was a very aggressive, no-holds-barred kind of pass. I mean, I wouldn't call it dirty racing, but it sure was... it was kind of borderline, I guess. And I'll tell you, the Spanish crowd was pissed off as well, because I remember hearing boos from the crowd, you know, boos for Rossi, which is not something that you hear every day. But I guess when you're racing in Spain, you don't want to be shoving the hometown boy off the track on the last corner unless you don't mind hearing a few boos. And you probably want to be careful, you know, going to your car in the parking lot after the race as well. In any case, I think that that was what finished Gibernau off mentally, you know, in his psychologically, finished him off for the rest of the season. He'd basically been kind of a mess since Qatar in 2004 with that whole grid sweeping incident and Rossi's reaction and kind of blaming Gibernau and the comments at the time that he made. But because previously, up until that Qatar incident, Rossi and Sette had, you know, maybe not, they weren't the best of buddies, but they were certainly not, you know, mortal enemies, and they seem to get along pretty well. But in any event, starting there at Jerez, Rossi finished the job of kind of getting inside Gibernau's head, and he just never left, and Gibernau was never the same. So, you know, it was a great race, very, very enjoyable, and it did sort of have some, I think it affected the season. I mean, right off the bat, the first race out of the gate and starts affecting the season. Now, Jerez is a good track. It doesn't really give you a lot of opportunities to really open up the throttle. I mean, they only get up into sixth gear once or twice for very brief periods, a couple times. Now, the Expo 92 corner, that turn one at the end of the start-finish straight, is, and the dry sack corner, which is at the end of the back straight, are where you're likely to see the most passes happening. They're fairly sharp corners at the end of a longer straight, along with that hairpin that's leading back onto the start-finish straight, the famous Rossi-Gibernau incident turn. Because the same story, you've got a fairly fast section leading into a sharp turn, so it's, you know, it's a logical place for a pass, of course. And incidentally, just in case you didn't know, dry sack is not a male itching condition. It's a type of sherry wine that comes from that region of Spain, which I remember my mom used to drink that stuff sometimes. So a lot of risers like Jerez. It's one of Rossi's favorite circuits. All the Spanish guys are going to be wanting to do really well because, you know, they're racing at home. And despite the totally bizarre testing session that we've had 2 weeks ago at Jerez, or maybe because of it, you're going to be looking for some good qualifying and racing. I think it's going to be an exciting weekend. And now that the season has started up again, thank God, I will start doing the Monday qualifying and race reports again. So look for one of those on this Monday, the, what will that date be? 27th of March. And now, my picks for the races. This is always dangerous to make any picks because, you know, you so end up being wrong. But to win, I'm going to go with Rossi. It's the easy bet, the easy way out. All the odds makers on the internet are overwhelmingly giving Rossi the odds, which, you know, isn't really rocket science there. But he's won the last five season openers. He usually does well here at Jerez. Now, if it rains, forget it. I don't think he'll win. But if it's nice, I'm sure that those chatter issues are going to go away somehow or another. He's going to have fixed that. The rest of the field, you know, especially with second, it starts getting difficult to try to take a good, solid guess. I mean, they're just all over the map. So second place is kind of really tempting to go with a Bridgestone runner because they did so well at that test, or maybe even Checa, who has just surprised us time after time on the test. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say Melandri in second, and then I'll put Cavarossi in third. So that's my picks. Rossi, Melandri, Cavarossi. Let's see what happens. All right, I have Chuck Axlin from Team Roberts on the phone. Chuck's nice enough to take a little time out of his very busy day, as you can imagine, been in the lead up to the first race at Jerez. Chuck's been running around quite a bit, but he took a few minutes to answer some questions. And welcome to MotoGPOD, Chuck.
Yeah, nice to be here, Bob. Thanks a lot.
All righty. So, obvious first question, I guess, is, you know, how do you feel? How do you and the team feel about the Barcelona and the Jerez tests, and how Team Roberts did there?
We've been making a lot of changes from when, you know, our initial test back in January on the chassis, and you know, everything's kind of whittled its way down to where we are leading into the first race. we're fairly happy. We're fairly confident when we're on race rubber that you know, we're as quick as all the other Hondas, basically. And we see some areas that will probably improve on that through the season, but I'm sure everybody else will too. The test at Barcelona was not looking too bad for us, and then obviously it rained during our MotoGP launch session, and that was quite exciting because with three minutes ago in the session, Kenny Jr. had three red helmets, which he was the fastest guy on the racetrack. And he was about a little more than half a second under the split of Valentino. And then he crashed in the same place Valentino and Checa and a couple other guys went down. So, but for us, it was kind of significant because it showed, hey, we're back in the race again. And we had a chance to win the car. And I think if he would have stayed on, we probably would have drove away with it. But saying that, we didn't want the convertible anyways. We were looking for a hard top, and convertible is no good in the rain.
I was just thinking, yeah, you're in England, a convertible is limited use, right?
Yeah, and then going into Jerez, or again, I think a lot of the times that come out of the two tests, especially in the dry, are a bit deceptive because you have full-on tire war going on, and you have guys throwing in soft tires and a lot of development tires and qualifying tires and so forth. And we haven't focused so much on, an outright overall lap time like a lot of the, a lot of the competition has. We've got a lot of work to do just on our baseline settings and preparing for a race pace. And, Kenny Jr., understands quite well that the race is the race and all the rest of it is really just really insignificant when it comes down to when the green flag drops. So we're fairly happy. We know that there's progress to come throughout the season, and all of us are looking forward to going racing to see exactly where we are.
Excellent. Speaking of tires, well, some of the news that we get is a little bit always abbreviated, and I don't remember reading it or not. Did Kenny manage to complete a race sim, or?
We haven't. We know that Kenny Jr. can obviously complete a race. He's probably in the best physical condition that he's been in quite a while. We've done long stints with laps, probably not a full race distance, but we understand how the bike will react, and we understand the tires. So for us to go out and prove we could do a race distance really wasn't on our agenda. We go out and we've tried to make adjustments to the bike, but we haven't done a full race distance, but we haven't been out trying to do one lap flyers either. We've been spending enough time to see what happens when the tire performance goes down, if it goes down and when it goes down, and see how the bike reacts and adjust to that. So for us, we know Kenny's strong enough. He can complete a race. We know the engine's not going to have any problems, and we know the tires will make it through. So we didn't really see it as a priority to actually go out and complete a race distance, so to speak.
Okay. Now, at Jerez, it was reported that you went back to the second version of your chassis with a few mods. Did you gain sort of more data from that you hadn't on the previous time that you used that second chassis? Do you have a fourth version ready?
We'll have a fourth version probably coming around Le Mans time. We still have sort of two chassis that are different from each other. It's basically what we started the Jerez test on, but they're not that far away from each other, to use both in a race, because there's still some things that we're, working with to try and to progress the motorcycle. So, you know, we didn't really see the need to bring out a completely different chassis yet at Jerez, because we still have some information to be gained that's going to go into the fourth one. But, you know, the like I said, the chassis were good enough and close enough position that we can go into the weekend feeling that, you know, they're close enough to participate with.
Okay. Now, we've been hearing from the Honda side of the house that they're long complaining about chatter in their Honda chassis. And does the Team Roberts chassis suffer from any of that? Is any of this somehow related to power delivery, that sort of thing, where you're seeing the effects of it?
Well, chatter comes from a lot of different areas. You know, it's a frequency that sort of takes off on you when, you know, a lot of things are matched up. It could do with have some to do with the stiffness of your chassis compared to the, you know, the tire development compared to the suspension. And so forth. Chatter, you know, we have seen some chatter, but really probably not any more than we're used to seeing in the past. And it's difficult to say really how much chatter the Hondas have. You hear Rossi talking the most about chatter, to be honest. And clearly, if you were out watching them at Jerez, you could see the chatter occurring with their bike. So I think for, as I said before, for where we are, for the tires that we've been running, you know, our bike looks fairly settled and good around tracks like Jerez, and hopefully we'll be able to be in a position to pull off a decent result.
Okay. What is your sort of, I know you know, making predictions is going to be difficult and everything, but what do you think is the best hope for a result at Jerez?
It's really difficult to say. Like I said, you know, if you go all through the testing data, you know, from where everything started to where it ended, the fields have been quite upside down at times. So, you know, all I could say is the competition is going to be close. You know, all 19 riders on the grid, I think at the last test were, you know, still only separated by a couple seconds. So I think getting in the top 10 would be quite a good achievement, especially where we're coming from. But, you know, our expectations are a lot higher than that. And, you know, I don't know if they'll come at Jerez, but they're going to come eventually. You know, that's down to the dedication that our crews put in, that, you know, our guys here at the factory have put in, and, you know, our riders put in. So all the elements are there. And, you know, I think we're not just looking at the best result out of Jerez. We're looking at making a motorcycle that consistently can get results through, you know, a series of races. And, you know, if it doesn't happen at Jerez, maybe it'll be the next race. Maybe it'll be Le Mans, you know, when we can get things kicking off. But, you know, Jerez is one of Kenny's favorite tracks, and he's looking forward to going there, as we all are. And, you know, if like I said, if we get a top 10, that's great. Top 5 would be excellent. And, you know, if we won the race, we'd have a party to last the week, I think. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens after we come out of the weekend.
All righty. Do you have any significant problems that you can see right now with the bike?
Not really. You know, there hasn't. You know, when we probably went to our first test in January, there were significant areas that we needed to work on. And I think if you, you know, you look at what happened at our last test, there wasn't anything major with the bike. You know, we're working on basically just varying the setup, and you know, the tires dictate a lot of that. So there was nothing that Kenny, you know, Jr. saying, hey, you know, fix this or you know, we're not going to be competitive. You know, as I said, the bikes are going to start pretty much as they ended at Jerez test, and, you know, we'll take it from there.
And talking about tires a little bit, we had some of the Michelin runners were kind of slipping down the timesheet at Jerez. And, I mean, just, you know, one test out of the whole thing doesn't a season make, but it is kind of interesting, and we're thinking that Bridgestone might be catching up a little bit in the tire wars, particularly when you take weather conditions into account. So is this something that you think is reasonable? I mean, is from your side there as an insider, are you seeing that?
Well, you see a few different things track to track, and if you go back last year, you know, Bridgestone and Ducati were fast at Jerez as well in all the preseason testing, breaking track records and so forth. And I'm pretty sure they didn't win the race. So, you know, I don't think you could underestimate Michelin and the effort that they're putting forward. You know, they're working hard. They collected a lot of information from the last test. you know, saying that they slipped down the, you know, the order. I think in the end, Pedrosa was third, and, you know, the next Michelin guy was fourth or something like that. So, you know, I don't think Pedrosa was on anything special when he was doing his tire. So, you know, those kind of times, you know, really reflect on all of us, because if he may have tires available to him that we weren't testing at that time and so forth. You know, you get to some tracks, and I think it's been the case, you know, even when we were on Bridgestone, you know, Phillip Island, Bridgestones went well around there. Montague, obviously, they go good. Jerez, they've done well in testing, but they haven't won the race. So, I don't know, you'll see. For sure, you know, Bridgestone's, you know, not slacking off at all either. And, you know, their ambition is to win world championship. And also this year you see some improvement from Dunlop, which is very exciting for the sport, I think. So, yeah, what we have is a full-on tire war. And, you know, we just have to take it how it comes, and some tracks are going to benefit some makes, and you know, when it's not to our advantage, then we just got to get the best result we can.
Yeah, I was just going to say that it is good for the sport, like you mentioned, and although that might not be the words you want to hear when you're trying to win a race that everybody else is catching up, it definitely does make it good for us as fans. So that's a very exciting season coming up here. One thing about the KR211V, we've heard that the Akrapovic exhaust on there is using Inconel rather than titanium. Now, is that a new development, or is this something that you've been doing for quite a while?
No, actually, our exhausts are titanium. I'm not sure where the rumor about the Inconel has come out. We've looked at Inconel in the past, but as far as I know, unless our engineers have changed something without me knowing it, which is not likely, you know, our spec is titanium right now.
Okay, so put that one down to idle internet rumor.
There you go.
So, now, engine-wise, and we kind of touched this on this. We touched on this a little bit on the last call, you said at the time that, you know, there's sort of no hard plans or anything like that. But engine-wise, if you're successful with Honda this year, have you heard or worked any more with about plans for next year with them?
Well, we've had some discussions about the future with them, and they seem very encouraged of what we're doing and how our team operates, and you know, the amount of work we've put in the short term just to get, you know, to the level we're at now. So I think they're happy with us, and you know, all indications are that they would go on to support us through you know, 2007, you know, maybe a little bit longer than that as well. A lot of it's going to come down to obviously budgets and so forth, but you know, at this stage, we'd like to think that we will be able to get a program in place to continue to use the Honda motors down the road.
Okay, and now Honda, and this might be a difficult question here, Chuck. Kenny Roberts and Honda have sort of long had a history of somewhat difficulty. I mean, was going to Honda, did it sort of take on a team level kind of a I'm not sure how to describe it, but, you know, was there sort of a, you know, oh, wow, we're going with Honda. Was there a feeling like that at the team?
No, there was, you know, quite the contrary. There was a lot of excitement because we know, you know, although Kenny's, you know, been outspoken in the past about some of the policies that Honda has chosen to undertake, you know, and this goes back many years. I mean, he's been a, you know, a Yamaha guy, you know, all through his career. And when we decided to become a manufacturer on our own, you know, the whole nature of what we were doing took on sort of a different, took a different turn of events. But, you know, he's more been outspoken about the policies. The one thing he's never been, you know, able to criticize Honda for is the level of engineering and the performance of their product. So when, you know, the opportunity arose to do a program with Honda and Honda engines, you know, there was this excitement, you know, and Honda has been very helpful and very open with any information that we have needed and responded quite quickly. You know, we designed the bike from scratch and had it, you know, fired up in our driveway out here in the UK in 67 days. So to be able to do something like that takes a, you know, a fair level of cooperation. And you know, I'd have to say the relationship's been great. You know, part of Kenny's criticism has been, you know, we've never seen the advantage of just leasing a bike from a company and, you know, raising the money and putting stickers on it and then trying to, you know, sell that program against a factory that's racing, a step above the bike that they're renting to you. We just didn't understand how that worked. And, if leasing engines was something that would have been available, then, that's one of the things that we were looking for all these years was, engine suppliers. And then, then each team could manufacture their own bike, maybe, come up with different type technologies or different ideas. So we're, we're happy that Honda has, looked at that and decided to go that way, and we're overjoyed that they decided to do it with us.
Okay, yeah, it's an excellent, it's working out so far this season. Like I said, it's very exciting, and it's a bit like Formula One, where you're getting your engines from certain places, and the chassis is the team's responsibility.
Well, that's right. We don't have to worry about the engine. The performance is there, and the reliability is there, and so it's up to us to make a chassis go around the track, as fast as everybody else.
And now, is Honda continuing to develop that 211V, that V5 motor through this season?
I would imagine they're still developing theirs. That's a question that you specifically would have to ask somebody at HRC. I don't know what developments they would be working on. I know, obviously, their priority and focus has got to be on the new 800. And to be honest, what do you work on? The horsepower, the drivability, reliability, it's all there with with their five-cylinder engine. So, if they brought another 15 horsepower, it really wouldn't do us too much good because, you have to control that power. So I would imagine that their focus is, main priority has got to be getting the 800 together. But other than that, I'm sure they're supporting their own factory team with Nikki and Danny Pedrosa, as required. The satellite teams, I imagine, that just takes, their take on that is how the season develops and who's in what position and, what requirements are needed to better the performance, if any.
Okay. So basically kind of what I was getting at on that last one is are you getting a stream of new bits from the Honda engine and from HRC? And it doesn't sound like, is that true?
No, not at this time. Obviously, we've just completed the testing. We're going in the first race. But, one thing that we are assured is our engines are on the same level as all the other satellite teams. So, whatever Melandri's running, Elias is running, that's what is available to us. And we haven't seen any reason to think that those other teams are getting anything better than us. We understand fully that, Nikki and Pedrosa, that's a different story. They're the HRC works team, and, their bike is, more of a prototype, and their engine's a prototype. So, they'll be getting the evolutions first. But right now, we're not asking for anything. There's nothing that we could say, hey, we need this for this track, or we need more performance here, or less performance here. We're happy with what we have. We're happy with the level of cooperation we're getting, and it's just down to us to make it all work and get Kenny Jr. some results.
Okay, great. And now Kenny Sr. was at Daytona during Bike Week with one of your, I guess it was a last year's bike or the previous year's bike on display, that sort of thing, correct?
That was a bike that was our second development chassis from this year. We ran it one time at Phillip Island, and it quickly turned into a show bike.
Okay. Did a lot of good stuff come out of that for him and for the team? Or was it more of a chance to show the Americans what's going on? Or?
Well, it was, it was a bit of opportunity for American Honda to, show to their people and to the American press that, the relationships that Honda and Kenny Roberts have. And for people to see, the development that we have undertaken and made by showing off the bike. I think, we got a lot of good press out of it from the American side. It seems everybody was happy with seeing Kenny there, and, Honda seemed pretty happy with all the activity that went on. So, again, Kenny's feedback when he came back was just, there's a high level of enthusiasm for what we're trying to accomplish. And it's good to see, because opportunity is there for us. And I think the American public, is behind us, and we could really feel that. And we do see and read the comments that are in the press and the papers and the internet sites, and it's all positive stuff. So all those positive vibes, you know, although it doesn't bring money in, it still gives us a good feeling about what we're trying to accomplish, and you know, just puts us in a good frame of mind to go to the track and work as hard as we do.
All right. Okay. Any leads on big sponsors, corporate sponsorships from the American companies or anything like that?
Not yet. We're working on a few leads. You know, our bike won't be bare, but we won't have a major title sponsor in place. We are working on it, but, you know, obviously it's, you know, our results over the last few years haven't really warranted participation from a company. We think we need to get the results up. You know, Kenny is still a very unique name and figure, and that, you know, that is very strong for a relationship to develop with a sponsor, especially an American sponsor. But you know, MotoGP right now, the environment, you know, is not easy to sell sponsorship. There are other teams, you know, obviously Cito Pons and you know, a couple other teams that are still working on their sponsorship packages. But I think you know, we get a little momentum going. I'm quite confident that the future looks bright for us.
Yep, great, outstanding. I think so too. Well, I really appreciate your time on the phone, taking so much time out of your busy week, because I know that leading up to Jerez, it must be tough. And we here at MotoGPOD definitely wish you and the whole team and Kenny Jr. the best of luck for the season. We hope to be talking again soon, Chuck.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And yeah, anytime. If any guys have any questions, you know, tell them to send you an email, Bob, and I could answer them if you like. I do listen to the show occasionally, and you know, you got some hardcore listeners out there, and it's quite interesting some of the you know, the things they come up with. The guy with doing the lap time comparison, I thought that was quite interesting how he had taken all his, you know, his time to do that. So it's great. You know, like I said, if they have any questions they want to throw at me, you know, send them in. I'll do my best to answer them, and I look forward to next time I'm on the show.
All righty. Yeah, that sounds good, Chuck. I think we'll put that out, and that'll help me, and we'll get a bunch of questions for you and give you a call in a few weeks, hopefully after you've had a very successful race or two under your belt.
Yeah, well, appreciate that. Thanks a lot. Keep your fingers crossed.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Chuck. Alrighty, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to enter the contest to win the set of Komodo leathers if you haven't already done that. Just listen to that episode, last week's episode, which was number 47. Then there's some questions at the end of the interview. Send the answers to those questions to contest@motogpod.com, and then I'm going to pick one winner at random from all the correct entries. Then I'm going to announce the winner on next Friday's show, which is March 31st. And the deadline for the contest entries is 3 p.m. Pacific time on Wednesday, March 29th. So you got to give me a day or two, you know, to figure it all out. So Wednesday, March 29th at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Pacific time is 8 hours behind GMT. So don't forget about that. And then also make sure you check out the KomodoGear.com website. They have some pretty cool stuff. And like I said, you're going to want to take a look at the, you know, two suits that we've got up for grabs. It was a Sino or a Miso racing suit, winner's choice, that Wayne Wilder was nice enough to put up as a prize. Wayne Wilder from KomodoGear.com. And as always, if you want to send an email with comments or suggestions or hate mail or whatever, the address is always MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. So this is Bob Hayes saying thank you very much for listening, and until next time, ride safe and enjoy the races. Oh, geez, got the tape in there backwards here. One more time.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.